Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5 for Autumn Semester 2018. Lecture 24, delivered on November 15, 2018. The title of this lecture is Net Present Value and Internal Rate of Return.
Tonight, Net Present Value and Internal Rate of Return. Now, as I had asked you to bring your computers or your calculators, this will be more using the electronics to do the work for us, the heavy lifting. And I can assure you that these problems can get to the point where not using it is going to mean that you're going to commit a couple of hours to doing the calculations for a single problem sometimes. So it's worth your while to make sure that you have the skill set. And I can't do a whole lot in a course like this, but I can show you Excel, some of the functions in Excel, and also show you along the way a few tricks and helpful, quick shortcuts to do things. But before we do that, a brief look at the numbers. As you can see, we had a good, strong up day, and it began in the mid-morning that you began to see a rally off the low on the spark charts there. And that continued through the day. And we're going to have those kinds of up days. And we're going to have some down days, high volatility, until something breaks. And then all bets are off. But that may not happen before the end of the semester. But I'm hoping you'll continue to look at markets after this course, just partially out of curiosity and also as part of being in business as professionals, keeping an eye on the markets to know what the economy is doing and all of that. Taking that off to the side here, the net present value and internal rate of return are the two best practices methods. One of them is actually superior to the other, and I'll talk about that in a few minutes, show you why one of the methods, net present value versus internal rate of return, actually can give you wrong answers, and also give you a caution about calculators versus Excel for deriving answers to NPV problems. Calculators and Excel will give you the same answer for internal rates of return, but sometimes they give you rather different answers for net present values. So, a 5-year project requires an initial investment of $220,000. The following cash flows are for the productive years. Of the project. Year, free cash flow. Year 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Let's also say that there's at the end there's a salvage value that's positive, taking in the costs of closing down the project and selling machinery and selling off the last of the inventory of positive $10,000. This can be a positive or a negative, depending upon whether your closed down costs exceed the costs of the revenues from selling the equipment, selling off the last of the inventory, and all of that. But we'll move with this one being positive for this. I'm trying to see if I got a better marker here. Here we go. For year zero, it's that negative $220,000. And then year one, we start out with $40,000. Then we're going to do $80,000. Then we're going to do $60,000. Okay, that's 12, 18. $50,000. And then in the last year, we'll have $20,000. That's 120, 180, 20, 230, 250. Well, let's say in year four, we have only $40,000. Okay, in year five. So year zero is your cash outflow, $220,000. And then year one, what, $40,000? Year two, $80,000. Year three, $60,000. Year four, $40,000. Year five, $20,000. And you have that salvage value of $10,000, which you add at into the last year. So your free cash flow total in year five is $30,000. Now, in order to find a discount, to discount these cash flows back to the present, we need a discount rate. So, sir, give me a discount rate.
Let's go with 6.2%.
Really? 6.2%? Okay. Oh, gracious me. Okay. Now, in practice, we would use like the capital asset pricing model to get a discount rate, figure the beta of the project and all that. Or we could might want to use the weighted average cost of capital to do it. Not a very good idea, but you can get the discount rate. Okay, so the discount rate we're going to try 6.2%. And we're going to do this on the calculator. So if you have your calculator or you have your computer ready, you just pull this up. And clear it. Start with apps, finance, and 7 is NPV, and you'll come back to the main screen NPV. Now, the first thing you're going to do is put in your percent rate of return, in this case, 6.2%. Now, as I've explained before, whenever you're finished with a data point, you put in a comma. You say, all right, calculator, I'm done with that number, so you can say comma. Now, with NPV, the next thing you do is put in negative, not minus, use the negative sign, $220,000. And then you put in a comma again to tell the calculator, I'm done with that. And then the next thing you do is with the Texas Instruments calculators, you tell it, here comes the positive free cash flow. Second open parenthesis, which creates a brace. Watch it because it's hard to tell the difference on this, these little pixel screens between a parenthesis and a brace. So make sure you do it right with your keystroking. And then you're just going to honk in those numbers. What did I have? 40,000. And then you give it a comma because that tells it the first year is done. If you have, the next one is 80,000. And then you give it a comma. I'm done with that number. And then you give it a 60,000. and I give it a comma, and then I give it a 40,000, and then I give it a comma, and then I give it the last number, which is a 30,000. And now I said, I want to tell the calculator, I'm done with the positive free cash flow. So I close the brace, second close parenthesis. Then I close the parenthesis that began the whole thing with the NPV function. And I hit enter. Ouch. The NPV comes out to be negative 7657. I'm done. Do I accept or reject? Exactly. It's not even a question. If it's negative, reject. It doesn't really even matter what the number is. In financial terms, what this is telling us is that the risk of this project is more than the value of present value of the free cash flows. In other words, it has a negative Jensen's alpha, essentially. So clearly, in this case, whatever the NPV function looks like, NPV against the discount rate at 6.2%, we're negative on the project. We're negative. It's actually not too negative. I mean, compared to your initial cash outlay, $220,000, and the cash flows themselves, which were in the tens of thousands, this is not too negative. So it's probably, it has just crossed the x-axis, somewhere just below that 6.2%. If I were to guess, I'd say it's probably around 5.5%. I'm not sure, but we'll now find out. Now we're going to do a little trick, find the internal rate of return of the project. But we don't have to key in all the stupid data again. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go up here, and I'm going to say second, enter, which edits the function. It opens what I keyed in. Now I'm going to go up here to the NPV. And once I've got the cursor on the NPV, doesn't matter where, it'll always just sit on the NPV. I'm going to say apps, finance, and now I'm going to go clear down to 8, which is internal rate of return. Click on it. See, it just replaced NPV with an IRR. Now, the internal rate of return does not require, you don't put in a discount rate. It finds a discount rate. So all I'm going to do now is just delete the 6.2 comma. And now I can do the IRR. You see this shortcut, how nice it is? Learning these shortcuts makes your work a lot easier in these problems. Enter. Oh, I was a little too high. The internal rate of return is 4.80%. 4.80, yeah.
So you don't need the NPV value for the IRR?
No, it tells you that the NPV at 4.8% is zero.
Oh, so this just tells us
where the crossing point was.
Right.
Okay? And that's kind of nice. So there you go. We have that this project has a negative net present value at 6.2%. It would have had a positive net present value at any discount rate below 4.80%. So that's nice. We've got that done. We're finished up with that. Now, let's take this into Excel. And it's very straightforward, but I'll show you just a little bit of trickery in Excel, nothing, just how you do it the most efficient way. I'm going to put in as the header on column A, year, and the header on column B, the free cash flow, And then down through here, I'm going to go 0, 1, and I'm going to highlight 0 and 1, grab the little handle, and just, whoops, and drag it down. To your 5. Okay? And then we're going to key in the free cash flows again. In this case, we'll have negative 220,000 down. And then what did I do? 40,000. Down, and then I did 80.
Yeah.
What's next? 60.
40.
Now here's where I'm going to do something. I'm going to come up here, before I finish, I'm going to type two things in, a header on row E, on column E, salvage value, and next to it, discount rate. And then I'm going to go back here to the salvage value, and I'm going to put in cell E2, the $20,000, or I'm sorry, $10,000. Was that $10,000?
Yeah.
And also, while I'm over here, I'm going to put in the discount rate of 6.2%. Now, in B7, year 5 free cash flow, I'm going to say that equals 20,000 plus E2. Let me explain why I'm doing that. When you key in the core data, you want that to be left alone. Now, a salvage value can be changed if your calculations are off or something like that. But what I am interested in is creating an integral free cash flow. I don't want to have to go back and play with that. More importantly, I don't want an end user to go in there and play with that. I can now lock that column A and column B so no fool who gets this sheet can touch it. You see, it's in there and I can lock it. I'm not going to lock it here. But this is something that you've got to remember, is that there is a core of information that you don't want anyone to play with. Once it's in there, it's done. And there are many horror stories. I think I even told you one about some fool who got a hold of the spreadsheets of a company. He claimed he was an expert in Excel. They gave him a project. He pulled up this Excel sheet that had been built for years. And he just started rewriting the core code. Oh, I thought this was wrong, the dumbass. And then, worse than that, he saved his file over the original. And, of course, that was a disaster, and they fired him right away. But underneath that, and they didn't like me saying this, I said, well, you were fools for not locking those cells and making them password protected. He got in where you wouldn't have wanted someone to be in. And sure enough, you got a moron who went in there and started doing stupid stuff. So that's why you'll see me sometimes, if there is a core of data, I will do everything I can to make it so that core of data can't be changed. Oh, you want to change the salvage value? Well, that's fine. Don't touch the original freaking data. You fix that salvage value. Oh, it was supposed to be 15,000. Oops. Okay, that's fine. But it didn't touch it. He did not have to go into these two vectors right here to do it. Those stayed untouched. So now we're, and I changed that back to 10,000. Okay, so that's that. And also the discount rate. Again, I want something that has the flexibility so that if I change my discount rate, I don't have to fiddle with any of the formulas. It's just I fix the discount rate and the NPV changes. So in this case, I'm going to do over here in cell A8, I'll type NPV, and then in cell A9, I'll type IRR, and we'll do those. Okay, so now equals, in cell B7 equals NPV, open parenthesis, and it's going to say what is the rate that we're going to use. That would be F2, comma, I should make that an absolute reference, F2, and I'll hit F4 to absolute reference it, comma, and now it wants the data vector. Notice that in Excel, it does not distinguish between the initial cash flow outlay and the remaining cash flow, cash inflows. And then I just close the parenthesis if I want to. Technically, in Excel, if it's just a formula, you don't have to close the parentheses, and I hit Enter. Uh-oh. Do you see something? Do you see something? Yeah. Remember I told you that was going to happen. Now, which one's right? Hell, I could find out which one's right. But, I mean, my life is short. I don't want to waste it. It actually, the two will give different answers. A calculator, a TI calculator, and an Excel spreadsheet will give slightly different answers for the net present value. Yes. Well, the problem, the problem is if they are very close to zero, you could very well have the calculator say no and the Excel say yes. We could even do what's called the grumpy cat logic formula equals if cell B7 is less than or equal. What are you bitching about? Oh. Equals if cell B7 is greater than or equal to zero, then yes, in quotation marks, and then comma, otherwise, hell no. Close parentheses. Whoops. If B7 is greater, I put a comma in there, sorry. Okay. In matter of fact, you could even do one where at zero, if greater than zero, yes, otherwise, if less than zero, no, otherwise, if equal to zero, meh, M-E-H, okay? If you wanted to be really fancy, okay, watch again. Let's clear this. Okay, so we're going to do equals NPV, open parenthesis, discount rate, F4, comma, and then just sweep down, whoops.
It helps to do, it's easier to do shift.
You know what? Equals. What the hell did I do now? Now I've screwed it up. Okay, let's try that again. Okay. Will you get off my... Well, yeah, you really screwed this up now, haven't you, Ace? There. Okay, we're all good. But you see, doing it this way, by using reference cells, like you saw me do up here, you can do more what-ifs more efficiently. What if the discount rate had been 5.2%? What if it had been 10,000 instead of 10,000, 15,000? Now, the internal rate of return equals IRR, open parentheses, and then you just sweep down the whole set of data. Because you don't put it at a discount rate, because you're finding a discount rate. Close the parentheses. Let me format the cells 2 decimal places. What? What the hell did it do that for? Oh, format. I can't even see the. My eyesight's so bad tonight. Percentage 2. There. See, internal rate of return, dead on. It's the NPV that gets a little bit funky sometimes. Which one's right? Well, actually, I could tell you fairly quickly if I just took the discount, discounted each of the cash flows back by the number of years, and added them to the negative initial free cash flow, I'd know which one was exactly the right answer. You might want to find out for yourself whom you can trust, the calculator or Excel. But you might be surprised by which one. You might be very surprised. But anyway, enough of that. That is the first round. It is so easy. Yeah, go ahead.
If you're on a test, which one would you, would you just go back and check it yourself?
I would. But look, okay, you're doing the homework in the book, that homework, what you do is one of those answers will show up as one of your possible answers. The other one will not. You follow me? So, if I see the answer 7316, you'll know those suckers use Excel to get their answer. Or I used Excel. If you see the other one, 7657, you'll know someone used a TI calculator. Interestingly enough, the HP series financial calculators, which are badass calculators, but they're also difficult to learn, the high-end HPs will agree with Excel, interestingly enough. They will not agree with the TIs. And I'm talking about the HP 12C, which is sort of like the ultimate business person's calculator. I've got one, and the only time I ever bring that out is when I'm trying to impress people, and I'm not trying to impress you. So, but as I said, HP calculators, these business calculators, they're flat, they're pocket size, and they do incredible numbers of financial things. The problem with them is that for basic arithmetic, they don't use algebra. They use algebraic notation. They use what's called reverse Polish notation, RPN. So on a TI calculator, you say 5 plus 3 equals. On an HP calculator, you say 5, enter 3, plus. Believe it or not. Once you get the logic of it, it's really hard to go back to the algebraic calculators. We used to use HPs all the time when I was in grad school. And then getting back used to algebra calculators like TIs, that actually took me a while to get back into it. But anyway, okay, enough of that. There, you now can do these in Excel. And imagine how... This actually is, once you've got an Excel model pushed out, set up, then it becomes really relatively easy to do these, even if you've got a lot of years of cash flow to analyze. Or you might get the problem where you've got some very ambitious fool who's done free cash flow by month for 5 years. And then you've got a data vector of 60 FCFs, and keying those in is more of a pain in the butt. But if you have an Excel sheet, you just tell the fool, send me those projections on an Excel sheet, and then you can just do it from there, like within seconds. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask if you could scroll over the net present value cells.
Sure, absolutely. There's the formula. Now, here's a strange thing that can happen. Now, IRR is generally used in coordination with a hurdle rate or something like that. Net present value is just there. The problem is that you have to stick your neck out and call a discount rate. Okay. And that means that you're going to have to do more work, use the CAPM to get an R, you know, R sub F plus beta of the project times the expected return to the market minus risk-free rate, or some other way to get that number. That, okay, they should always give you the same answer, yes or no. NPV versus IRR. Here's one place where it won't happen. And just telling you a personal story from my professional life. When I took courses in finance, they brought this up. This could happen. This scenario could happen. And I kind of thought at the time, well, I don't think so. Whatever. It was three different projects I analyzed over the years, this did happen. Here's where it could happen, is when you have projects that are mutually exclusive. In other words, you could do one project or the other project, but not both projects. An example of that would be you have two projects, A and B, and they both need to use the same piece of land that you have. Okay, you can't do them both on that same piece of land. You've got to choose one. What if they're both positive NPV projects? Or what if you have, for example, the expertise of one person for a new project, but you have two different possible projects, and only that person in your company has that expertise? You're going to have to choose one of the two projects for that person, for them to do. Another place where it could happen, now this is an old philosophical argument. What if you have a capital constraint? You don't have the money to do both projects. Now, there's the quick dismissive argument. Well, if they're positive NPV, you can always find the money for them. Blah, blah, blah. Not if you're a small company. A huge company can always find enough money to do two different projects. There's no capital constraint. But if you're a small company, if you say go to a bank and borrow money, let's say $200,000 for project A, well, they might charge you 8%. But if you go back and say we also have this other project that's going to cost $300,000, they're going to jack that project's interest rate up to 12%. Bondholders would do the same thing to a small company because your risk is greater borrowing more money. So that completely rewrites the calculation of the weighted average cost of capital. So for small companies, they can't oftentimes do all of the projects that they would make money on. They have to choose. This is one of the problems we have with these huge monopolies and oligopolies, is that they can just gobble up every positive net present value project they find, leaving nothing for small companies to do. And then oftentimes, they will, like Google is famous for screwing up projects. They'll take on an app, they'll take on a social media site, and then they'll screw the pooch on it. And that's something, so it would have been better if you'd had hungry small companies do these, because they probably would have been able to do them better. But they had capital constraints, so they couldn't, even though they knew those projects were out there. And they had to choose otherwise. Here's a scenario. Suppose that you have Project A. And Project B. And here are your NPVs. And here are your IRRs. Now, Project A has a net present value of positive $40,000. Project B has a positive net present value of $32,000. Project A has an internal rate of return of 13.5%. Project B has an internal rate of return of 15.2%. And the company's hurdle rate for projects is 12%. It's a value set by a company, a policy value, that no project can earn an internal rate of return below this value. So in this case, we have a company, we will not accept any project that has a net an internal rate of return below 12%. We just won't. Now you can see that these two projects are both yes on both criteria. They're both positive NPV, so we say yes. They both are well above the hurdle rate, so they're both yes on IRR. But we can choose only one of the two projects because they are mutually exclusive. What's a mother to do? What are we going to do here? Because you see that on one decision criterion, we would take Project A because it has the higher positive NPV. But on the other hand, if we look at it from an internal rate of return point of view, we would take Project B because it's further above the hurdle rate than Project A is. No. Yeah, go ahead.
Does that just mean there's less initial investment?
No. Interestingly enough, they could have the same initial investment. As a matter of fact, in one of those cases I was telling you about that I personally ran into, the initial investments weren't identical, but they were very close. They were within $15,000 of each other, and they were both $500,000 projects. So that was one thing that I had always thought, well, maybe it's just that initial investment. Not really. It's the pattern of cash flows that does it. Some projects have more of their good cash flows out in the back years. Some projects are stronger in their front years. And so that seems to me to be what shapes the behavior of the NPV versus the IRR. Because projects that are strong in the front years will tend to have higher NPVs because the cash flows aren't being discounted as much. And projects that are strong in the out years will have weaker net present values simply because those good cash flows are going to be discounted back very heavily because they're coming from so far out in years. That's more or less my impression of what's going on. Yeah. Not necessarily. Well, yes, but what this really means is that Project B gives a higher return because it's a higher risk project. I'm paying less money to get a positive net present value, so I am gaining because it's riskier. I'm putting in less money. You put in money into a penny stock, you're taking extraordinary risk. Project B is more like a penny stock that wins because it's going to give me a higher expected return for a lower investment. But at the end of the day, I make less money on it. I make an abnormal profit of only $32,000 on Project B. But that $32,000 is a higher rate of return. Clearly, that means it's a higher risk project. Project A delivers more punch at a lower risk level to me. In terms of decision making, and I will tell you this right now, this is not what most companies would say, but if these are mutually exclusive projects, the academic, the school rule is take net present value. Look at go for the net present value. Close your eyes to the internal rate of return. Yeah, the internal rate of return is higher, which means you're going to get a nicer kick out of it, but that is coming at a higher risk to you. You're getting a higher return on it because it's a higher risk project. It's going to deliver to you less money, abnormal profit at the end of the day for that higher return. Clearly, from our standpoint as more of the deep analysts, NPV dominates here. But there's another reason that I take this to, and I'll explain that. Internal rate of return has a fundamental flaw in it. It doesn't show up and it doesn't cause any trouble unless. So anyway, in this project, in this choice, the NPV rule would say take project A. If you're a company that believes that internal rates of return are the holy grail, they'll say B. And I guarantee you, more companies are going to say B than A. And I you know, quite honestly, I ran this one company. The CFO had an MBA, and he had good finance background. It wasn't as good as if he'd had me as his teacher, but he just went with Project B in that case. He went with the higher internal rate of return project instead of the higher NPV project. It turned out to be a winner. There is no question it was a winner. But did it win as much as the other way would have? I don't think so. But it really didn't matter in the end because it was a good project. Both of these are good projects. So it's almost like an academic fight which one you would want to take. Because in the end, they were both good. He chose B over A against my advice. And it came out to be a good project. And he conceded, I explained to him, I went through literally almost exactly what I'm telling you, and he understood. He said, but, you know, I was taught to use the internal rate of return method, so we're just going to do what I was taught. Where did you go to school? Ah, okay, that explains it. Wasn't here. But that was years ago anyway. As I said, though, there's a flaw in net present value, in internal rate of return. It has no bearing on anything until it does. And I'll tell you all about it. But I'm going to have to take you into something. Many people in their lives have something that happened in their past that they have blanked out. They don't want to deal with it. They just close it off so they never have to know anything about it again as long as they live. And I'm going to have to take you there, and we might have some sobbing and, you know, some letting out of old emotions and stories that happened years ago. Yes, madam, you. We're going to go back to high school,
okay.
To algebra.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I know you're beginning to tense up already.
No, it was my favorite class.
Oh, God. Polynomials.
Okay.
Remember polynomials?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember the term, the degree of a polynomial? The degree of a polynomial is the highest power to which the independent variable occurs. So a degree 1 polynomial is otherwise known as a linear equation. Degree example. A degree 1 polynomial would be something like x, like 2x plus 3. See, the highest power that x occurs to is the first power. Actually, a degree 0 polynomial would be something like the number 4, because there's a hidden x to the 0 power. That's a degree 0, but we don't need to do that one. Degree one polynomial, we call it a linear equation. Highest power of x is 1. A degree two polynomial would be something like 4x squared minus 3x plus 1. See, the highest power is 2. A degree three polynomial is something like x cubed minus 5x squared plus 8x minus 4. Highest power is 3. And on and on. That's the degree of a polynomial. And you're saying, where the hell is this going in a finance class? Finance is all just nothing but math, which kind of blew me away when I got to the PhD level, and it was nothing but the same equations that I had learned in physics and chemistry and all those. It's the same thing. It's just math applied to business. But anyway, trust me, this is going someplace. Now, you remember that a degree one polynomial is a straight line, right? It crosses the x-axis one time. Well, that's wonderful. It's wonderful. A degree two polynomial crosses the x-axis. It's a parabola. It's a quadratic equation. It crosses the x-axis at most twice. It might cross once if it just nicks and comes back up or nicks and goes back down. Or it might even have no roots if it just misses completely. But it has at most two crossings of the x-axis, two zeros. That's important. Remember, IRR is the discount rate that makes the net present value zero. A degree three polynomial has at most three crossings of the x-axis. It could have two if it goes, crosses, and then misses. It has to have at least one, but it could have two or three. Similarly, a quartic, a fourth degree, can cross the x-axis at most four times. That's important for us because internal rates of return are nothing but the roots of a polynomial. If the sign of the cash flow switches only once, from negative to positive, that's a degree one polynomial. It's linear, and therefore, you see the classic NPV function, internal rate of return, right there. But if the sign switches more than once, then the internal rate of return crosses once, crosses again. It can even cross three times because if it switches negative to positive, that's once. Then positive to negative, that's twice. Negative back to positive, that's three times. It could have as many as three internal rates of return. Three times it's crossed the x-axis because it is a third degree polynomial. So what does that mean? Which one of those, suppose that I have a cash flow that switches from negative to positive to negative. That would look like that. Or actually, no. No, it would actually, I'm sorry, I did that exactly backwards. It would look like that. It would be a third degree polynomial because it went negative to positive once, positive to negative twice, negative to positive the third time, as the cash flows of the project first were negative, then you made money, then you had to put more money in, and then you started making money again. There'd be three internal rates of return. Which one would be the one that's right? None of them. They are completely meaningless. They have no meaning whatsoever. But your calculator is going to tell you an internal rate of return, because what the calculator will do is when you give it those cash flows, it will, when it finds an internal rate of return, it just takes a guess at where to start. It might take a guess right here, in which case it would start searching back and forth and find this one. But if it took the guess down here, then it would find this one, taking guesses back and forth until it locked in. It would have no meaning, though. None of them actually have any significance whatsoever. They are completely meaningless. That's why if you have a project that has more than one switch in the sign of the cash flow, you're not going to be able to get an internal rate of return. You will. It'll tell you. Your calculator will. I think even Excel will give you an internal rate of return, but it has no value whatsoever. It has no meaning at all. No meaning at all. So, as a real-life example, this was back in the late 1980s. A company that I was with, I was actually part of this company. It's no longer around. It just failed because the big shareholder was a drunk. But finally ended up in jail for a long time for DWI. But we started out with having to get a prototype and order a mold, plastic injection mold made in Taiwan. And this cost money. You know, do this, do a preliminary round of 5,000 of this product, and then we can test them and do some marketing and all this. That ran us, I guess, it was probably around 30 grand back in the 80s with Taiwan, with a manufacturer there. And so we had a negative cash flow, and then we had produced enough that we could sell, and the cash flow went positive. The strange thing was, and this was kind of my fault, I had no idea this thing was going to be as popular as it was. We sold out very quickly that first round. I mean, way more quickly than I would have expected. I was projecting that we would have some sales for about 18 months and then it'd pick up and people would start buying. No, I mean, we wiped out within probably 2 months. In the desperation to keep going, so we got money in, positive free cash flow, 1 year. And then we were going to have to order a second larger injection mold to be built by this company and then order 100,000 units. So year two was going to be a bloodbath of negative cash flow. So we went negative at first, year one positive, year two negative. Then year three, we just sold those out and we carried for about two more years before the company collapsed because of the fool that was running it. But so you see, there was a classic example. Very often, you'll have a preliminary test market, and then you'll adjust, spend money to fix problems or to adapt to what you find out in the real world. And so you'll have a negative year, possibly a couple of negative years, but then you'll go back into the black and make money. Negative, positive, negative, positive. It can happen on projects. So what that means is that it is not that unusual for internal rate of return to not work. Even though you could get a number, it won't be a number that means anything. So how do you deal with that? Well, obviously, that's one of those arguments. Use NPV. You don't have the problem anymore, fool. It doesn't deal with polynomials and all that crap. But God knows there is desperation. If you're an internal rate of return jockey, you cannot be dissuaded from internal rate of return. So, unbelievable as I have always kind of found it to be, bear with me 1 second here. We had to create a way for companies to be able to still use internal rate of return. And the way we did it was to create something called the MIRR, the Modified Internal Rate of Return. And let me tell you, this is a pain in the butt to do by hand. It's easy in Excel, and I think you can even do it in the TI. But if you're doing it by hand, it's a pain, and you'll see why here in just a second. Watch. I produced this one. Is there some reason why that sucks? There. I created a project here, which the cash flow pattern, year, free cash flow, and we're going to go 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and the free cash flow is negative 220,000. Year one is 40,000. Year two, it is 100,000. And that's when the project has to have a bunch of money thrown into it to keep going. So after all the new bills for new marketing and R&D, we are in year three, negative free cash flow of 30,000. And then we come back into the black at 90,000. And including salvage value of 20,000, we have a total free cash flow at the end of the project of 50,000. There was 30,000 in money, and then close up salvage value was 20 on it. Okay? So, interestingly enough, you have here a classic example of a switch in more than one sign switch. Now, modified internal rate of return does this. It requires two rates, a discount rate that applies to expenses. And a reinvestment rate that applies to positive free cash flow. In other words, when you make money on a project, you reinvest it at a certain rate. Okay? So, fortunately for you, the book requires only that these are the same rate. Realistically, your reinvestment rate would probably be higher than your discount rate. But the book simplifies it, and I was going to write some problems that were more realistic, and I thought, nah, it's just a pain in the butt to do it anyway. So the discount rate is used. You back all of your negatives as present values. You discount the negatives back to the present. And then you compound all of the positives out to the end of the project. You discount at the expenses rate. You compound out to year five at the reinvestment rate. So essentially then you have a negative value on year zero, and then you have a 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, and then a positive, big positive value at year five. Then you discount that one back at the discount rate and see if it's more than the value at the front end. Did you follow that? All you're doing is you're taking one rate and you're getting all of the negative cash flows up to the front, and then taking all the positive cash flows and finding their future value at the end. And then, so then you have just one big negative number at the front, then 0, 0, 0, 0, and then a big positive number at the end. And then you discount that one back to the beginning at the discount rate, the expenses rate. And you see which one's bigger. If it's a negative, it's no. If it's a positive, it's yes. Or with the modified internal rate of return, you are finding out what discount rate would make it zero. Okay. Now, and I'm going to do this one with a reinvestment rate. Now, in Excel, it's going to want you to tell it both rates. So if you're doing this in Excel, you just tell it the same rate for each of the two numbers. Okay, so in this case, the reinvestment rate, I'm going to set at 5%. just like the discount rate. Now watch how you do it. It's actually really easy. Once you do it, I mean, this what I just showed you there, it, you know, just don't even worry about it. You just say equals MIRR, open parenthesis. Okay, here we go. It's going to want your values, okay? First, you tell it here. Use these numbers from year 0 through 5, okay? There. Now, comma. Now it's going to want to know the finance rate. That's your discount rate right here. Okay, your finance rate is what I'm calling the discount rate. Then, comma, your reinvestment rate, which for the problem in the book is going to be the same as the discount rate, the financing rate. Okay? For the problems in the book, yeah. Now in real life, it would be your finance rate might be 5%, your reinvestment rate might be 7%. Okay, at least you'd hope you could reinvest the money at a better rate than financing rate. But for the ones in the book, okay. Now watch. Whoops, I need to do that again. MIRR, and then over here equals. MIRR, open parenthesis, your free cash flow stream, and then comma, finance rate, the discount rate, comma, the reinvestment rate, close parentheses. Oh, there we go. So the modified internal rate of return on this project is 4.67%. And that's a true one, that's a clean one, but you're going an awful long ways to salvage your love of internal rates of return if you do this. But there it is. Now the last thing would be, suppose in this case, I want you to tell me, if you're an internal rate of returns person, is this a project a go or a no-go? Look at how much money costs. How much does money cost you to use? Can you see that in this Excel sheet? How much does money cost you? What percentage? What's the financing rate? Bingo. What does this project return? Look down at the bottom. So, is this a great project or not? Say it. Don't be afraid. Just say, if you're wrong, I'll just say, you dumbass. No, go on. Don't be afraid. Tell me. No, don't say no. You say no, man. You're supposed to be the prof. Can't you see that? You're good, though. You see, this is a no. This money costs 5%. The project's going to spit out 4.67%. This is no, because even by the internal rate of return method, this project goes on a website called projectsucks.com. And we saw that anyway because the net present value at 5% was negative. So basically, we just did a lot of work for nothing because the NPV told us at 5% the damn project was a no-go. You see the idea there? It all kind of comes around to the end, and we really didn't need to do all this work with MIRR and all that stuff. I didn't even need to teach it to you, but I had to show it to you to convince you. Don't bother with the MIRR, except for the problems in the book, but in the homework. You follow it now? Because the finance rate was 5%. The net present value knew that. And it said it ain't a good project at a financing rate of 5%. But no, we had to find a modified internal rate of return because that's so popular in corporate. That even when you have sign switches, more than one sign switch in the cash flow, which makes internal rate of return completely invalid, we've got to go and try a trick called modified internal rate of return, which is going to eventually tell us the same thing that the net present value would have told us if we had just stuck with that. So there you are. And that's all I have for you tonight. Go home.